Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. Tim's here. I'm here. Everybody's happy. It's November 6th. Tim, how you doing? We've been talking for the last 20 minutes. So there's not really anything to catch up on. You had a boring weekend. I had a fantastic weekend. Par for the course. My life is fantastic. Yours is very forgettable. Not how you expected the opening to go. You want to know why mine was so good?
Not really.
I played a couple hockey games last night, and in the first period of my first game, I absolutely went bar down from the blue line off a face-off. I'm talking pating down. Everybody on the ice was like, whoa, and I felt so good.
Was it clapper?
Oh, yeah. It was a great shot, and I couldn't do it if you asked me to, 100 shots, just take them. When nobody's guarding you, nobody's coming at you. I couldn't do it again, but it was just a really nice shot. It felt good because I don't do it very often.
One of the unwritten rules of men's league, though, is that if you're a defenseman, you're shooting low because no one's wearing a lot of protective gear.
That is an unwritten rule.
You let it rip, though.
I very rarely shoot low. Everybody knows when I wind up, just get out of the way. Because it's a running joke. I broke a guy's hand last year. I'm like, get out of my way, man. I'm going to let her fly. Who cares? I scored. Didn't celebrate. Classy celebration. Turned, skated back to the faceoff dot. Maybe that's not so classy because I don't even cheer with my teammates. What would your celebration be, Tim? Because your kids do this growing up. You know, you're on the back pond. You're in practice. You score. You do your celly. What is your dream celebration? You get the big goal, overtime winner. What is Tim Wurzberger doing?
I'm jumping into the glass.
Ovi style. Game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pasternak.
Celebrate with the fans. Yeah.
You like that.
What would yours be?
I always liked the Tiger Williams style, riding the stick, but I wasn't able to do that. I don't know. I did it in the All-Star game. Touch the ice, do the big celly, make a big scene of it, but I don't know. There's some pretty good cellies out there. There's some ones that are not that great. We should rank the best celebrations for goals on current players or just all time. Like the famous one is Theo Fleury. He scores the overtime winner. He runs, he skates down the ice and he's falling all over the place. It's just very exciting. I don't know.
We used to have one in our men's league back. I think it might have been like the summer men's league when I was in college. And every time we scored a goal, all five of us, no matter who was on the ice, didn't celebrate, just sprinted immediately back to the face-off thing and just waited in our positions.
That's annoying.
Yeah, that the older guys hated it. The older
guys hated it. Well, because you're embarrassing the other team.
Just sprinted, let us go again.
It's all about class and respect in my eyes. Not for you, apparently.
That was a long time ago.
You know who's classy? There's a young kid named Jude Napier. He sent out a nice picture to us. He tagged us on Instagram. He went to the Blackhawks game, Tim, last week. His first Hawks game. He was very excited. He made a sign. Is he wearing a Bedard jersey? Is he wearing a Taves jersey? Is he wearing a Kane jersey? Tim, what jersey was he wearing?
Maybe Taylor Hall jersey?
Maybe Taylor Hall.
That was my
guess. Lots of choices. There's an endless amount of Hall of Famers that came out of the Blackhawks organization. Which jersey is he wearing? He's wearing a John Scott jersey. He sent out this nice picture to us on Instagram. The sign says, John Scott, 5 goals. Connor Bedard, 4 goals. Very nice. Very good sign. He's going to have to update it just because Bedard has scored 5 goals already. But yeah, really nice to get that. It's good when, a little kid still has got your jersey. He looked like he's, 7, 8? No.
He probably wasn't born when you were in the league.
Makes me feel good. Tim, I was in the league 5 years ago. So it made me feel pretty good.
Thank you for saying that.
6 years ago. 6 years ago. Yeah. So Jude, congrats, buddy. I'm glad you went to the game. Maybe I'll catch you one of these days when I'm in Chicago. I just got caught off guard last night after my high of going bar down on this goalie, who was very good, by the way. I was driving home and I checked my email and one of the NBC producers was like, looking forward to this Thursday. I go, what are you talking about? He's like, yeah, we're going to do the pregame at a local bar. It'll be great. You can go there and walk back to the studio and it'll all be set up. You can, we'll manage all the logistics when you get here. And I'm just like, I had no idea, Tim, I was going there this Thursday. And I have a lot of plans this week. So I had to quickly send out an email to everybody saying we had an interview planned. I can't do the interview, can't do this, can't do that. So you got to stay on your toes. Anyways, moving on. What are we talking about this week, Tim?
Well, I want to talk about Brady Tkachuk, friend of the show. We can spend just a minute or two on this. We don't have to spend a lot of time, but the Senators are struggling, and he had some interesting comments after the game, and he's kind of calling out his own fans a little bit, which I feel like in this situation was totally fair, and I don't think he's really being negative about him. He's just pushing back a little bit. So the Senators lost the game. They get booed off their own ice, and most of them are openly calling for DJ Smith to lose his job. We know from Brady and from others that have spoken about it that they like him. They like DJ Smith. They like his coaching style, but something's not working. They're last place in the Atlantic, even though they're only 4-6, which isn't horrible. And that division is just it's a death sentence. So this is what Tkachuk said to the media after the game. Quote, it's frustrating whenever you don't win, it's frustrating. It's frustrating the negativity from the outside, the constant booing and the BS kind of from the crowd tonight. I understand that they're passionate fan base. And I understand that and I love it. But when you face adversity and you don't turn your back on the guys out there, we're playing hard. I know it's frustrating right now. It's not like we're giving up out there. We're fighting right to the very end. So he's basically saying he calls it BS that the crowd booed him off the ice. What do you think about that?
This is not the first time he has mentioned this and kind of pushed back against the Ottawa fan base, because a Canadian fan base is different than an American fan base. Canadians have very, very a short time frame until they get frustrated, because they know good hockey. They played it their entire life. They can tell when the team's not playing up to potential. So this happened after the second period. Tampa Bay was up 4-1 going into the locker room, and the fans were rightfully upset and frustrated. Ottawa, they responded. They came out, scored a couple goals, made of the game, but Ottawa eventually lost 6-4. I get where Brady Tkachuk is coming from. I've been on bad teams where you think things are going okay. You're trying your best. You're not giving up. And you're just not getting rewarded. You're not getting the puck bounces maybe here and there. And you're playing a good team. Tampa's a good team. And the fans start booing. And you're just sitting on the bench and they're really giving it to you. And there's nothing you can do about it. And I'm a fourth line schmuck. Like it doesn't faze me as much as it does Brady Tkachuk, because he's playing 25 minutes. He's the face of the franchise. So inevitably it falls on him. Why are we losing? It's your fault, Brady Tkachuk. You're the one steering the ship. You're the guy. So he's frustrated. He's like, we're doing our best. And it's not like they're not having a great season. Like you mentioned, they're not having the ideal start that they wanted, but they're 4-6 for Pete's sake. They would have won. They would have been 500. So it's very strange that the Ottawa Senators fans are already getting this frustrating and booing the team after 10 games. Do they expect them to win the Stanley Cup? Maybe after this offseason, they get Tarasenko, they sign Claude Giroux, they're making moves, this and that. They want them to make the next step. But I think it's a little bit premature to be booing after the second period when you're facing the Tampa Bay Lightning, who have gone to three straight Eastern Conference Finals. Like, this is not the Buffalo Sabres you're playing. This is the Tampa Bay Lightning, a pretty legit team. So is it a good thing for Tkachuk to push back, Tim? How does that go over in the community? Because he's that guy. He's the face. You know, he's the one who's getting all the endorsements all over town. Do the fans like that? Do they not like it? What's your take on this?
I can't speak for the fans of Ottawa. I did see a lot of positive feedback on this from just the regular hockey, you know, personalities and media guys around the league. Our friend Amel from Nation Network said he's the best captain in the league, probably, or top three. Wow. In response to this comment. And we've said similar things before. I like that he wears his heart on his sleeve. Like, it's passionate. You don't say that unless you're passionate, unless you're holding it close to your heart. So I think it's a good thing. And he's not really like, remember when Bo Horvat last year like talked about how much better the Islanders fans were than the Canucks, like things like that. Yeah. That's not really close to what Brady's doing here. He's just talking about like, listen, I get it. We're frustrated too, but I don't appreciate being booed. And I feel like that's a fair thing for him to say, especially when, like you said, it's a 4-6 start. I know it's a frustrating thing. You have higher hopes heading into the season. You kind of thought you guys would be at least a playoff team, but not a contender. And now you win only 4 of your first 10 games. That's not good enough, but it's not a death sentence. And I feel like they can bounce back from this. So I'm pretty good with his honesty. I think it's a good thing.
Do you think he's getting a pass because he's built up such a good amount of goodwill and positive stuff on this team and in this city? Whereas like a guy like JT Miller last year, where everything he said in the press was twisted and turned and he was just crucified for it. So is there just a difference where Kachuk's put in the groundwork there? He's been there a long time, where fans are just like, okay, you know what? Maybe we're being a little too hard on you, where JT Miller comes into Vancouver. Because essentially, very similar statements for both of them.
Yeah, I mean, I think Kachuk has that credibility that he's built just by being a leader, by being there for a long time and a lot of ups and downs. And he signed long-term contracts when they didn't have anyone else locked up, when they weren't competitive. And he stuck around for the rebuild. So I feel like he has earned that like credibility, like you said. So maybe, but I don't think that's a bad thing that he's getting a little bit of a – I don't even think it's a pass. I think he is in a place where he can push back. And you're seeing it right now.
Where does this team go from here? Because like you said, this is Death Valley for teams. Like you have the Bruins, the Lightning, the Leafs, the Canadiens, Sabres, Panthers, Red Wings. What if they don't keep winning? What happens? Does he keep pushing back on the fans? At what point do the fans have a legit right to boo the team? Tim?
Well, this is where you get into like their upcoming schedule. So they have a big game against Toronto on, what is it, Wednesday. I wouldn't say that's a must-win category, but that'd be a great win because then you have Vancouver, Calgary, Detroit, Minnesota, Islanders, Florida for the rest of the month. Those are all very winnable games. If you could start it off with a win over Toronto, that's even better because your confidence is going to be boosted heading into these West Coast games. So I feel like if you're looking for that, you're looking for that win against Toronto to start things off. Because a lot of people are talking about whether DJ Smith's even going to have a job by the weekend. I don't know how close he is to that. I think I saw an article on Daily Faceoff on one of those sites saying he might be on the chopping block pretty soon here. So I think that's kind of the other question right now.
Yeah, there's a couple coaches early on that are already feeling the heat because they're just not living up to expectations. You mentioned just easy wins when you look at the schedule, and it just struck me in years past, you could lock in, you know, a road trip where you're going to face some pretty low hanging fruit and lock in some points. This year, there's very few teams that are an easy out. Gone are the days when you go play Arizona and that's an easy win. Then you'd swing by and you'd hit Anaheim and you play this team and that's an easy win. There's only a handful of teams, Tim, that I think are easy outs. You have maybe the Chicago Blackhawks, but they've beaten the Vegas Golden Knights. They're not an easy out anymore. You obviously have the San Jose Sharks, and then the two teams in Alberta could potentially turn into easy outs for teams. Gone are the days like when I used to go to Alberta. It's like, gosh, we're in for one. We're going to play the Alberta, like Oilers, Flames, and Vancouver was a scary stretch, but now all of a sudden that seems to be pretty easy if you're a visiting team going into that province. But a surprising team that could potentially turn into an easy out are the Minnesota Wild, currently sitting seventh place in the Central, are off to a terrible start. 4-5-2. Nothing's really gone right. The star players on this team, Zuccarello, Eriksson Ek, they're having decent starts, nothing to write home about. But what's been the main issue, Tim, with this Minnesota Wild team, who the last few years have played pretty solid, even though they're in salary cap hell, like we've talked about year after year?
Yeah, there are a few things I notice when I look at their stats and I look at their roster. The first one is you need more from Kirill Kaprizov. He's got 11 points, which is good, but you need more than 3 goals in 11 games from your star forward, really the driver of your offense. A great start from Zuccarello, a good start from Eriksson Ek, even Hartman. I know we talked last week about the value of a point per game when your best players should be better, but 10 points in 11 games for Hartman is a good thing. 11 points in 11 games for Eriksson Ek, who's a defensive stalwart, is a good thing too. But Kaprizov, you need more. You need more offense from him. He should be at 6 or 7 goals by now, and he's only at 3, which is concerning. The other thing is that the goaltending. Fleury has been okay. His 2.68, I believe, his goals against. Save percentage below 900, so that's not good enough, but he's been okay. However, Gustavsson has gotten the bulk of the starts. He's gotten, I think, 6 out of the 11 games he started, and he's been pretty terrible. I'm surprised we haven't talked about this sooner. His goals against is almost 5, 4.89, 8.71 save percentage. Like, that is really, really bad. And the third thing I think they're missing is that number one defenseman. Dumba's gone. He's in Arizona now. Spurgeon and Goligoski are on the LTIR. You still have Brodin, who's a stud. You have Jacob Middleton, who's a defensive. He's like a 6th, 7th defenseman. Yeah. He's leading the defenseman in points with 7. Like, that's obviously not going to keep up. So you're missing that guy. who's going to run the power play, who's going to log the heavy minutes, who can kind of do everything defenseman. Spurgeon's probably that guy, and hopefully he's healthy soon. But to me, those are the three things that stand out.
Yeah, this team is not it's not good. Not good at all. When you look at the goaltender, Gustafson, he was brought in. He got traded for Cam Talbot. Talbot didn't work in Minnesota, so they thought they'd switch it up. Atrocious. Just absolutely awful. They just gave him this big deal this offseason. What is he making? $3.75 million. It's not good enough. Marc-Andre Fleury finds himself as a starter. At 38 years old, he probably went in thinking, maybe I have a good year, I get traded to a contender, and I can be a backup just like Jonathan Quick is or something like that. All that aside, they're not a good team, too. I think the shine is finally starting to wear off. The reality setting in. The year after year of this salary cap hell because of Zach Parise, Ryan Suter is starting to set in. They overachieved the last few years. You can't compete when you're eating $15 million in salary cap. It just isn't possible. So if everything isn't going right, if Matt Zuccarello isn't playing incredible, if Kirill Kaprizov isn't scoring highlight reel goals, Matt Boldy, injury issues already this year. I think he's only played five games. He's only got one goal. So maybe he's starting to come down to earth a little bit after that great sophomore campaign. I don't know. I don't know what else you can expect from the Minnesota Wild. In my eyes, they are an easy win these days, which is hard to say because they have pieces that are good. But when you can't have $15 million to spend on hockey players, that's a big deal. And then you look on your back end and your star defenseman who's making $7.5 million is out. So you're missing $22 million worth of players. And I know Jared Spurgeon goes on the LTIR and it frees up $7.5 million, but it's not like you can go out and find a guy for $7.5 million that's as good as Jared Spurgeon. You can't. It's just impossible. So you do what you can do, but it's just, what's that, Sam? What were you going to say?
Just give me a random team, any team. Just pick a random team.
Well, let's go with the Seattle Kraken.
Okay. I'm going to pull up what you can get for $15 million on this roster. It's basically anyone.
And that's a
you
bad
want.
Roster. Yeah. Any two guys on that team you could bring to the Minnesota Wild.
Three, there's no forward making more than 5.5. And the only guy defenseman who's making more than 4.6 is Vince Dunn at 7.3. Like you can go get Schwartz and Eberle and Adam Larson. Like
you can
how much
bring
better
over
their
whole first
make?
Line. So yeah. Imagine taking Seattle's first line, plunking it in Minnesota, then adding Vince Dunn. It's a pretty solid team.
Yep.
So Billy Guerin has had this task of icing a competitive team for the last few years now. When you're basically eliminating a first line, maybe a second line, because Seattle is a strange team where they really don't have a superstar making a lot of money. They have a lot of good second line players. But yeah, it's you can't compete in today's hockey where you're really focusing on that star player and those really high-end guys to anchor that first line. Then you fill in around them. We're seeing teams struggling now because they have those high-end guys and they weren't able to put the pieces around them to supplement that first line. Edmonton Oilers come to mind where it's like, okay, we have a first line. They're not really working out. Colorado Avalanche are still trying to piece together the players to go around their first line, but luckily they have world-class defensemen. They have a good goaltender in place. It's not like the Minnesota Wild have a Cale Makar in the back end. They don't have those types of players to kind of buttress up a poor third or fourth line. So I don't know. They're an easy out for me, Tim. I think when it comes down to it, if I'm going into Minnesota, I'm expecting to come out with 2 points now. Whereas last year and the year before, I was like, you know, this is a good team. We got to get up for this team. I just don't see them being the threat they were in years past. Am I wrong?
No, this is not going to get, I would say it's going to get ugly, but it might get ugly. You're $15 million off the cap this year and again next year. Like it's not going to be pretty for a little bit, which is tough. And it's not Bill Guerin's fault, but he's going to have to clean up this mess.
If he's around in 2 years, he's going to have so much fun when he gets that money coming off the books. And then the cap eventually will rise this year and the next year. So he's going to have probably $30 million to spend in one offseason where he's just been counting quarters the last few years, trying to make things work, shaving money. Now, if you're a Minnesota Wild fan and you're betting on your team, you're experiencing lots of losses. I'm talking losing left and right. If you were a Minnesota Wild fan losing those bets and you were signed up with Give Better, it wouldn't sting as much because even though you're losing, your favorite team is going downhill. you would still feel good because 25% of all of those losses would go to charity. Now, if you're not signed up with Give Better, you better do it soon because gambling is fun. Losing, not fun. Giving some of your losses to charity, a lot of fun. You can pat yourself on the back. So go to givebetter.app/DTG right now, and it gets better, Tim. You take a quick survey, you get a chance to win 2 tickets to any NHL game you want. Any day you want, any place you want, lower bowl tickets. It's a fantastic offer that's only going to last for another 2 weeks now. They're drawing November 27th, so get going quick. Sign up at givebetter.app/DTG for a chance to win 2 tickets to any NHL game in North America. It's a great deal. They're a good company. They're trying to do good stuff in a market that is a little slimy, online gambling, but everybody enjoys a good bet on a team, especially if they're your team like the Minnesota Wild. So why not make some good out of a loss? 25% of all your losses go to charity. You can write it off for Pete's sake. It's a win-win. So find them in our bio. Give Better, social responsible sports gambling, Tim. All right. We talked about the Minnesota Wild, a team that's kind of on the downward slope. What's a team that's surprising right now?
This is the team we just touched on just a little bit last week, the Anaheim Ducks. They've now won 6 straight, including beating Vegas last night, handing Vegas their first regulation loss. They also beat Boston during this stretch here. So the playoffs started today. Anaheim's in it, which I don't think many people saw coming. What's happening? Well, Mason McTavish leads the team with 13 points. He had 43 last year in 80 games. So this is having a breakout year. He's going to probably more than double that if he keeps this up. And then Frank Vetrano is tied for 2nd in the league with 9 goals. He's already had a hat trick. He's just scoring in bunches right now. Rookie Leo Carlson, the kid, not putting up a ton of points yet, but he's getting a lot of praise and a lot of positive feedback in what I'm reading about just being already an NHL-ready player, even though he's only 18, I believe, making big plays for the big team. And what's interesting is that all these things are happening well, right? And you would think, okay, they're young, up-and-coming team, their young skill guys must be leading the charge. Zegras must have, what, 10 points? Maybe he's had a quiet 8 points. He has 1 goal and 1 assist. That is the exact same stat line as his teammate, Radko Gudas. 11 games, 1 goal, 1 assist. What's going on?
Bad for Nick Neubetter. He's not a great hockey player. I think he's just that early season little spat he had and the pushback from management and the contract negotiations not going his way. He wanted north of $7-8 million. He felt like he was in the same group as those high-end guys. He's not. It's Trevor Zegras. He is a very selfish hockey player. I think this is a good thing for the Anaheim Ducks that they're succeeding and he's showing his true colors. Maybe he comes around and they make him a better team. Who knows? But he's got 2 points, Tim. He's playing on the first line. It's not like he's getting lack of opportunities. He's on the first line. He's on the first power play unit. The guy is getting a lot of ice time. He's just not scoring. He's not putting up points. So I think it's a good lesson for kids. It's like just shut your mouth, play hockey, and good things happen. When you go and spout off in the media and you're all over social media and this and that, I'm not saying it happens to everybody, but this is a good lesson for you. He's got 1 goal, 1 assist. He's not too active on social media now, is he, Tim? You don't hear much from him. You don't hear much from him in the press these days, do you? He's out of the locker room pretty darn quick. So it's just it's nice to see something like this happen. But it's not just the forwards and the defensemen getting it done. The goaltenders are playing pretty solid. John Gibson, could he go down as a modern-day Henrik Lundqvist, though? He's just like a solid goaltender, never has a bad season, but just doesn't win anything because the team they're surrounding him with really isn't Stanley Cup contenders. Because I love myself some John Gibson. This guy's he's a stud, Tim.
He's a stud. He's had some bad seasons, but he's also been on some pretty bad teams.
Stop. Bad teams or bad seasons. He's been holding this team competitive for years now.
Last year, .399, .899.
But it's a team. If it's any other goaltender, it's .720 and 8 goals against per game.
Yeah. And Lucas Dostal or Dostal, I don't know.
It's Dostal.
You definitely don't know. They've split pretty much 50-50. He started 5, Gibson started 6. Both goals are below 3 goals against average, save percentage above 9, which is kind of what you want. I'm kind of starting to drink the Kool-Aid a little bit. I'm starting to think these guys might be onto something. And the fact that they're doing it without Zegras means if he starts turning it on, which I don't feel like you're not confident on, but I think if he's a skilled player and he puts up some points, which he's capable of doing, they're going to be even better. And they brought in Killorn last night back from injury,
No good.
which is he's back in the lineup too, which is pretty cool.
No, I think Zegras will turn it around. He's too talented to not get points, but it's just a good lesson that maybe you should focus on hockey a little more before you start asking for everything and then some. But yeah, Anaheim will be there. I think, gosh, will the Oilers ever wake up? I know I keep going back to that, but I look at this Pacific Division. Vancouver, I don't think is going to slow down. I like Vancouver. They're playing well. They're playing with confidence. Rick Tocchet has them buzzing. LA's always there. Vegas is going to win the division. So it's that fourth team. Is who is it going to be? Is Seattle going to show some signs of improvement? They've been struggling. They're just hovering around that 500 mark. Calgary is a dumpster fire. I think we all know that. Is Edmonton going to find their way? Is McDavid going to just carry them to a playoff berth? I don't know if that's going to happen. So I like Anaheim's chances. I think they're playing well. They're playing with confidence. And yeah, good for them. All right, Tim, what are we going to talk about? Oh, the Oilers. Ugh,
Speaking
all
of
right,
those,
let's get to them.
yeah, I mean, it's almost like what else can we say at this
Oh,
point? But we have to
gosh.
say something.
Are
2-7
we
and
going to talk
one.
about Evander Kane's wife? I know we talk about her quite a bit. She's been causing it just a pain in the side. Do you think she contributes to this at all? Because I've been on teams where the wives are just a little bit, outspoken. They're causing problems in the wives' room. Nothing to this extent where she's airing dirty laundry about Evander, supposedly talking about McDavid's wife, calling her ugly and stuff and this and that, or his fiance. That's like crossing a line. And that's just the latest barrage of her throwing just haymaker after haymaker at Evander Kane. It's just, do you think she's going too far?
Well, if you take it for what it's worth, and she is a mother who doesn't have access to her child,
Have you
can
seen
you
the
go too
SNL
far?
skit? I'm your mother.
No.
It's Fred Armisen and Zach. What's the guy's name? He was in Baywatch. He's like a
Zac
heartthrob.
Efron, yeah.
Galifianakis. Zac Efron. Yeah, go check out that skit. It's really funny. Fred Armisen. I'm your mother. And he's like throwing glass cups at him. It's one of the best SNL skits I've ever seen.
I will
Anyways,
watch it. Yeah, but
she's a scorned mother, for
it's
sure.
like if your child was taken away, is there something you wouldn't do?
It
Probably
depends on
not.
who took the child, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I go back and
That
forth
was a
on this
kidding.
because sometimes I'm like, well, this poor woman, right? And Evander is like, if where there's smoke, there's fire, and he's had all these issues, and she doesn't have access to her little baby. And then I read stuff, I'm like, I think she's a liar. I think she's making a lot of this up. And then it's also the court system wants the mother and the baby to be together. So the fact that they're
Yeah.
not really speaks on the flip side, maybe it's just because he has better lawyers and he's spending millions and millions and she can't afford it. So it's just like, I don't
Does
know.
he have that money though? He was left with nothing when he got sued by all those casinos and he filed for bankruptcy.
Yeah.
It's a toxic situation, Tim. It really is. And you were saying she's making a ton of money on her side gig, which is definitely eye-opening. If I'm trying to get my kid back, I don't think that's the angle I would take, but it's not a good situation to have around a professional sports team. I'll say it at that. And it's obviously it's affecting the locker room. You can see it on Connor McDavid's face after he gives an interview. They're now 2-7-1. This is the second worst start in team history. The worst start was 92-93. They were 1-8-1. They are 2-7-1, everybody. This is not a good hockey team, but you have the two best players on the planet, which is so bizarre that those two things can coexist at the same time. But here we are. It is what it is. This was a buy or sell segment. We didn't really do it with the first two teams. Are you finally selling? I was a little worried when McDavid went down with the injury. You weren't too much because you said the Oilers were deep. Are you ready to concede that they're in big trouble? You shake your head and you roll your eyes like, I didn't say that.
I
We
said they
have
were
the receipts.
deeper
You said
than
they're a
you
deep
give them
team.
credit for.
And now are
They're
you ready to
deeper.
concede that they're not very deep?
Yeah, well, they're not deep. Because even, man, that look that Draisaitl gave the reporter when he was asked if they were a one-man team, and he looked up like, are you out of your mind? and then they lose a bunch of games, and McDavid comes back, and they win that one Heritage
Outdoor
Classic.
Heritage game, yeah.
And then they start losing again. And it's like, geez, geez Louise. Is McDavid even, how healthy is he? You know, like, he's still putting up points, but not...
not the pace that he's used to.
No, he's usually at double this when he start the season. And he spoke at their last loss, which was Nashville, I think. And he said it's a death by a thousand paper cuts. Like, they're in pain right now. And it's kind of like Brady. It's a frustrating thing, except there's just... I don't know. It's bad. It's just bad.
So here's my question. Drinsaitl was asked that question, and he gave a very quizzical look. Like, are you seriously asking that question? Do you think he's unaware at how bad the team is when McDavid's not playing? Like, he seemed to be offended, but maybe they are fooled. Maybe they do think they're Stanley Cup contenders, and maybe they do think that they don't need McDavid as badly as they do. Because I was, you know, the question was a little unnecessary at that point, but it's obvious. If McDavid's not 110% carrying this team, they're terrible. And Tim, I'm not even being exaggerating a little bit. They're a bad hockey team when McDavid's not the best player on the planet. And I think they're showing it. They have no offensive jam. They have no pace in their play. Their defensive zone is terrible. And don't even get me started on their goaltending. Jack Campbell is atrocious. The fact that he's still playing on an NHL roster boggles my mind. The only reason he's there right now is his contract. You can't send him down. You're going to have to eat that cap. His numbers, he's 4.5 goals against per game. He's played 5 games. He gives up 4.5 goals against him. That's 23 goals. It's awful. His save percentage is 8.73. And Stuart Skinner, the saving grace last year, everybody thought he was the second coming of Grant Fuhrer. This guy, let's anoint him the savior. He's going to be our goalie of the future. Gone are the days of Mike Smith and this and that. He's 1-3 with a 0.86 save percentage. Goals against 3.62. Both of their goalies suck so bad. But is this a case of the defense or the goaltenders, the chicken or the egg? I don't know. Their defense seems, I thought they had it all figured out. They made a good trade. They bring in some good players on the back end. It's just, it's not working. Can you finally just call this team what it is? They had a good few years where they were on a good run, but now they're just a bad hockey team.
I wonder how much of it too is like, eventually teams are going to catch up with you, right? Like, if you have the two best players in the world and you can do a lot of crazy things on the ice, you're going to win some games, but eventually they're going to understand how to play against you. Do you think some of that's happening too?
Well, I don't think it's that, because teams have always known how to play against these guys. You try your best to lock down McDavid. And if you can't do it, but you try to contain him. And I think this year he has lost a step. He's injured. He's not his usual self. And I think teams are able to slow him down. Even I bet he's clipping along at 70% right now, and he's still got 10 points in 8 games. He's a once in a generation player. Like, he really is that good. But when he's not playing to top speed, this team sucks. Like, it really does. I know I keep saying that, but it does. So, you bring over, who just got a big bonus? Connor Brown, I saw it. He just got a $3.5 million bonus because he played 10 games. He was going to be the guy playing with Connor McDavid. They played in juniors together. He was going to ride shotgun again with him and Hyman. And there was going to be Drinsaitl on the second line with Kane and Hopkins. It was going to be great. Connor Brown has 0 points. Zero. He stinks. And they're going to give him $3.5 million for his 10th game play just because he had that bonus in his contract. So they signed Sam Gagne. Like, what is this, 2020, like 12? All these contracts these teams dole out. Oh, he's going to revert back to the player he was. They never work. The Hawks tried to do it in 2016 or 15 or 17 when they brought back everybody.
Yeah.
And it never works, Tim. So I don't know why GMs continue to try to go back to this well. Oh, he's going to, you know, he feels comfortable here. He's really going to, you know, revert back to his good times. Never happens.
Jaroslav Halak. Halak is practicing with the Hurricanes today. I wonder if he's going to get a roster. But just back to the Oilers real quick. You know Jay Woodcroft a little bit from your time in San Jose. Is he the coach to right the ship? Or should he be on, like, the chopping block as well?
Like, I don't think any coach can right the ship. I really don't. Like, what kind of coach do you need? Do you think a coach is going to come in who's like a hard nose, you know, busting balls coach is going to come in and be able to jive with McDavid and Draisaitl? I don't think so. What kind of coach works in this environment?
Well, just if you drop in Cassidy or a John Cooper or Brind'Amour, do they start winning some games? You know,
I really don't think so. Like, no? I think Woodcroft is a good coach for this group. He's an offensive minded coach. He really teaches the game. He's smart. He's good with kind of numbers and this and that. And they had some early success with them, but it's just they don't have the horses in the stable. This is a bad team. They're not deep. Like, they have three or four up front that are legit NHL players that can score goals. Their third and fourth line, I think, haven't scored all season. Like, they're not a good team, Tim. I think we can stick a fork in the Oilers. They're done. They will not make the playoffs. I'm selling hard on this team, as hard as I can.
I'm holding out just a little glimmer of hope.
You're the ever optimist. You really are. You're eternal optimist.
Just because
optimist.
Of McDavid and Draisaitl. Just because of how good they are.
She won't cheat on me again. She said she wouldn't.
Yeah, but they've made the playoffs the last few years in a row. So it's like...
In the dumpy Western Conference.
Well, it's still dumpy now. So
it is. But they're the dumpiest of the dumpers. They are.
They're the second worst team in hockey. And the only team that's worse than them is the worst team of all time.
Oh, my gosh. The San Jose Sharks. San Jose, oh man, first team in NHL history to not register a regulation win in their first 11 games or something. There's some stat that they are now officially the worst team in the NHL ever, history.
The third or fourth team ever to let 10 goals in back-to-back games.
Great. That's hard to do. Vlasic sitting in the press box going, dodge that bullet.
He didn't dress in that second game?
I don't think he did, but oof. It's not a good environment. And they even have a crappy rink and practice rink, so even going to the rink stinks. You know, it's just like, this sucks. Everything in San Jose is kind of a step below other organizations. For whatever reason, the owner doesn't want to invest in the team too much. It's just not a good spot.
I wish we can go back to like early years of the show from 2020 and you talking about how ugly it's going to get for this team when all these contracts, not that you were the only one saying it, but we talked about this for years. Oh, yeah. And this is worse than we imagined.
I said them, I said the Capitals, and I said the Penguins. The Penguins are still trying to hold on for their dear life. But look at the Capitals are bad. Penguins are bad. Sharks are bad.
Penguins are still like at the bottom of their division as well, except now their goals for just shot up after this one game. So you think they're more competitive than they are, but they're not.
It's called the Sharks effect.
Yeah.
Not the butterfly effect. Play the Sharks, your goals for goes up through the roof. All right, let's do some quick hits, Tim.
Yeah, these quick hits are brought to you by DoorDash. When you need quick delivery, go to DoorDash. Try promo code NATION25 for 25% off your first order and free delivery. Valid only right now in Canada, but for the U.S., we're coming for you soon. Kind of a controversial play over the weekend here. Mangiapane of the Flames was suspended for one game for cross-checking Jared McCann, who was down on his stomach, facing away, and he had a nice two-hander to the back of the neck. A lot of people think it should have been more than one game. What did you think?
I think George Parros is having a bad start to the season with his suspensions. I think he's missing the mark. This should have been 3 to 4 games, I think. Vulnerable position player, McCann, just completely on the ice, not able to defend himself. And Mangiapane buries him in the back of the head with this, like he just cross-checked. It was clear as day. The reason this one is very, fans are up in arms is because of Jamie Benn last year in the playoffs. When he gets Stone falls to the ice and Benn looks over top of him and cross-checks him right in the neck. Very similar play. Benn gets 2 games in the playoffs, which is the equivalent of 6 games regular season. Why only one game? I don't understand. Mangiapane, he's probably a first-time offender. He doesn't seem to be the type of guy who does this very often. I don't know his history track record, but what's Parros doing? He doesn't suspend Marchand. He goes easy on McAvoy. He goes easy on Mangiapane. You got to lay the hammer down. We're going to talk about all these star guys being injured now. You got to set the precedent. So who's injured now because of Parros can't control his players?
Well, Timothy Liljegren has a high ankle sprain, which is probably, I mean, I know it's a very painful injury, probably better than, or I guess better than it could have been. It could have been a lot worse. based on watching that video, but he's headed to the LTIR, not playing anytime soon.
That's a multiple week. I've had a high ankle sprain, awful injury. That's a 4 to 5 week potentially, depending on the grade of it. But it's not a fun one to have.
Adam Fox headed to the LTIR,
Foxy lady. LTIR
after collision with Sebastian Aho last week.
Dangerous collision. I don't know if you caught it, but kind of he was going into the offensive zone. Sebastian Aho catches his knee. Did not look good. My fantasy team is getting decimated. I have Adam Fox and Jack Hughes, my two studs, and they're both out. Jack Hughes went down with an upper body injury. He's week to week, Tim.
That was another one where they kind of said this could have been a lot worse. So they might have gotten away with one there. Hopefully he's back. He's back quick. He's young. He's pliable.
Speaking, what does that mean? Pliable.
It's Tom Brady's word.
That's a little weird. Speaking of Liljegren, what are your thoughts on Ryan Reeves talking tough now, saying it's not going to happen again?
Okay. Ryan, you're a friend of the show, but that's what you were brought for. It shouldn't have happened the first time. And then he says, well, Brad was lucky he wasn't on the ice again with me the rest of the game. And there's footage. There's two clips where they were on the ice at the same time.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
And someone pulled the receipts. It's like, oh, if only. And then here it is. And it was like, I don't know, like maybe 30 to 40 seconds total. But you were.
Reeves,
yeah. And I hate that he keeps getting asked about it. I'm sure he doesn't want to talk about it either. But. Just ugly. And even Sheldon Keefe said, quote, I hate everything about it. The lack of response, which is, I mean, it's a nice quote, but it's just like too little too late, man.
Yeah.
It's brutal.
It's Ryan is getting a taste of Toronto media. He's probably been saying this stuff for years in Vegas, in St. Louis. Nobody really follows up. Toronto's a different animal. Everything he says is analyzed, put under a microscope, and it better be true. Because if it's not, you're going to be lambasted all over media. And he is, rightfully so. He's having a terrible start to the season. He's -8, 0 points. He needs to do better. I think he would be the first guy to say that. In this situation, he should have tapped Keefe and said, hey, do you want me to go after him? Yes or no? It's a close game. I think it was 2-2 at the time, maybe 1-1 or whatever. It's a divisional game. Keith says no, then you take his number and you try to get him back. You don't say stuff in the media because now if he does something when they play each other December 2nd, he's going to get suspended. It's premeditated, this and that. You just keep your mouth shut. You go about your business. Then a month later when you play him, you bury him. You absolutely bury him.
Well, assuming Lucci's is back by that point, does Reeves... Lucci's not, isn't going to let him go with anyone else but him.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like, is this finally going to happen? Because if Reeves goes after someone besides Luch, when Luch is saying, you go through me now. I mean, even Trent Frederick, I would say Luch still wants that one. So,
without a doubt. Frederick is a middleweight at this point in this when it comes to Ryan Reeves. Like they're not in the same weight class.
He would fight him.
He would, but they're not in the same weight class. Yeah. So I think you have to fight. You have to. Like there's no other way around it. And it's one of those things. I remember going into Boston after the Ryan Miller incident. And I was fully expecting to fight Lucic, Chara, and Thornton that night. I was brought in to calm the storm, to be the guy to say, you're not doing this to our team anymore. We went into Boston, first game of the year, and I said, I'm going to fight all three of you. And it was matter of fact. I said, Thornton, Lucic, Chara, bing, bing, bing. I dummied Thornton. I looked at Chara and Lucic, and I said, that's one, you're two, you're three. And those guys were picking up quarters the rest of the game. And you go watch the tape after I knock out Thornton. I turned right to, I don't know if it was Lucic or if it was Chara. I said, he's one, you're two. And that was it. And so the expectation now is for Ryan Reeves, you have to take care of business. Like, that's it. Like, this is your job. You were paid a handsome amount to come to Toronto. You gotta go buck up, man. Like, it's time. So I'm excited. December 2nd, I think, or the 3rd.
Yeah.
Your allegiance to the Bruins. It bothers me a little bit. I'm telling a factual story and you're rolling your eyes like I'm lying.
Well, here's the thing. Talk about my allegiance to the Bruins. They're having the best start ever, even coming after the best season ever last year. And we barely talked about them this year. So I feel like other than them being in trouble, which I have owned. So I feel like I've done pretty well for myself.
You have done good in that regard. Yeah, we'll talk about them next show. They're 9-1-1 to 19 points. It's incredible. The last 2 years, they could go down as probably the best regular season team ever in all of sports if they continue this. And they would have a banner in the rafters if not for that selfish prick, Patrice Bergeron, inserting himself in the lineup in round one when they're up 3-1 versus the Florida Panthers. Isn't that amazing?
Thanks for listening, guys. Have a great night. Cheers. See you Wednesday.
Well, have a great night and a great morning. We appreciate all the support. Tim's going to go drink his sorrows away with his Crown Royal. We'll talk to everybody next week. Cheers, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.